All right, so we've arrived at the last session, our closing session. There'll be a few remarks just at the end of it. We do have two collaborative project signups in the back. You don't have to commit today. Just if you're interested in chatting further about either of them, please put your, I think it's just your society, your name, your email, so that we can pull together some people after this event. So the next talk, Josh is going to speak. You can see the title up there, What Now? Turning Steps into a Collaborative Action, an inspirational look at what societies or societies together can do in 2017. And please welcome back Josh Taylor.
All right, so they tried something new, and kudos to you for trying something new. They said, you know, why don't you do the last presentation and basically create it throughout the day as you listen to things? So I did. I took some samples from sort of other things that I've done and things that I heard, and so we're going to see how this goes. I have an hour. I might take 30 minutes. I might take 45. No, we'll be here. We'll be here for an hour, and probably leave some time for questions, because that's the only way to make something up on the fly, right? Ask plenty of questions, and then everything goes just fine. I've really enjoyed today. As I mentioned at lunch, it's very rare that I get to actually sit and listen and observe society leaders sort of talk about what they're working on. I listen to great advice from people that are on the ground and working at it every single day. I have fond memories of doing an Ancestry Day when I was in Boston, and oh my goodness, the work that went into that day, and that was before they had decided to actually call them Ancestry Days. And no one had any idea what we were doing. You know, it was just sort of an experiment. And yeah, we made a very good profit off the day and had a lot of positive things come out of it. But I was sitting back there and I was remembering the first time that we decided to do it. And I just remember afterwards, you know, everyone smiles really nicely because they're Ancestry, right? And oh yeah, we can do this. And then the door closed and I went, what are we going to do? Like, it was just this instant moment. So I sort of had that, you know, what now? How do we turn things we've heard into collaborative action? And one thing that I do quite often, someone mentioned just after lunch about the vision statement that you should do as you're thinking of branding and the importance of a vision statement. And whenever I start a new position at a society or a new role somewhere, I sort of picture the headline of a newspaper. And in 2 years or in 5 years, if there could be a headline in the newspaper about our society and about, you know, sort of involvement with the organization that it's had in a community, what would that headline be? Sort of what would you aspire to in that sense? And when you can get your board to collectively agree upon what that headline should be, it really helps to inform all of your future actions, because you can always gauge whether or not what you're doing in that moment will help you achieve that headline. And so as we think about how to approach the sort of what now topic, I wanted to spend a lot of time looking at how we actually approach this when we leave today with our boards and with our friends and our members, because you are the influencers. You're the folks that decided to come and spend an entire day with other society leaders. You are not your entire board. And one of the things that I frequently know, you know, when I hear a new idea, I think, you know, I might love it, but I got to convince 20 other people about it. You know, I got to take this home. How do I do that? How do I spread my enthusiasm for it across the board? And how do we function together so that we can achieve that main article? So a couple of thoughts I had just from the very beginning, even from this morning, is that our work really has just begun. Talking about ideas is a really easy thing to do. It's you know, it's fun for a lot of us. We can sit in a room and, you know, we either like to talk about big things, we complain about things, right? We love to complain, we love to talk about good things. But it really is only the start of it. Luckily, you are not alone. I hope that you've met some friends today at your tables and around the room, those you might have already known or those who you sort of knew faces of via Facebook or other forms of social media. But we really are not alone. I'm always encouraged. I guess I'm not encouraged because I hate to hear societies that are struggling or that are having problems. But I'm encouraged when a society can find a common ground and at least a place to work from to start something new and start working together. I think that we also, it's evident to me that we have to begin thinking differently. During the session on management, there were a couple of notes of, this is a business, and I can't emphasize that enough. The biggest mistake that I think I've ever made as a society leader or board member or volunteer was not realizing the business aspect of the role in the organization right from the very beginning. We have a responsibility as leaders. We have to think differently. We can't do things the same way we've always done it, but that also means in the way that we approach our new ideas when we take them back to the board and take them back to the society. So with that, we absolutely have to take these ideas back. We have to take them back, and we have to talk about a consensus with the board. And I love the example that was given of the board member who sat and might have been vehemently opposed to something all through a meeting, and at the end, if they didn't agree, walked out and carried forward. And that's very, very hard to do. But the truth is that you are here today, and you have some gems of knowledge from great on-the-ground individuals who the panelists were fantastic in giving us practical advice and practical experience. But now it's up to you to take those ideas back and figure out what you're going to tackle first. So congratulations, you're now an official change agent. And whether or not you wanted to be or not, you are. You are the person that can foster collaboration. You're the person that will raise the controversial issue at the board meeting. You might be the person who spends the next year trying to get one idea to actually come to fruition. And so choose carefully. Prioritize, figure out which, sometimes I always compare life to figuring out which snake am I going to cut its head off first, because there's so many coming at me. But what's the one or two things that you're really going to take home, that you really want to drive, that you're going to be the change agent for, right? You're a change agent, like it or not. You came by coming today, by walking in that door, you became one. By leaving, what are you going to take back to your society? In looking at changes, I had this on my computer, and I thought it was really interesting to note how different we are as genealogical societies from the rest of sort of the nonprofit world. This is from 2013, but it's interesting because it talks about the top five changes in the way that nonprofits will work in the next sort of 5 years. And some of these are not far off from where we are, but number one on the list is that raising money from the crowd, the sort of the idea of crowdsourced fundraising. And I was literally, during the day, I keep up with social media because, Twitter is, if I didn't have my Twitter feed, I wouldn't know what was going on, I feel like, anymore, because everything's happening. And I realized that there are thousands of dollars that were raised, probably potentially $1 million raised today with natural disaster reliefs and with all sorts of different things, just via the crowd and the power of social media. There's a news anchor today that's running that he will donate $1 for every retweet that something gets up to $500,000, and he's up to $17,000. There's all sorts of things happening. And I realized, we don't do that a lot as societies. We're different than that. And so maybe part of today is realizing, when we go back to approach these ideas, to think about the crowd versus just our sort of inner circle of members, right? How can we leverage that crowd? The second is impact investing, which really doesn't apply to a lot of our organizations here at an in-depth level. There are very few genealogical societies that have millions of dollars to invest in the bank. So I sort of look at this, and when I look at it from the what's now question, it's how can we make sure that we are having the most impact from the investment that we are putting into our time, right? You can't take back every idea today and have all of them come to fruition. So what are the one or two ideas that you're going to take back? This was certainly a topic today, and that is demographic shifts. It could be controversial. It could send us for a loop, but what if what we're offering right now isn't really what our millennials want? Right? What if we are trying to sell a horse and buggy when horse and buggies haven't been used for centuries? And it's discouraging in one way, because we talk a lot about how to adapt millennials, but when we think about the shifts in our demographics, part of the sort of actions and sort of bringing the changes, what specific actions can you make to attract a different type of leader or a different type of member? Do we go back to our board and maybe we say, I want us to compose the sort of, the ideal member for us, and then let's look at the demographics in our town from the 2010 census, and let's figure out in the next 20 years who our members will be. where is their family history going to be from? And do we serve that audience? Right? When if someone knocks on your door in 20 years and says, I'm here researching my great-grandfather, where will their great-grandfather be from? And can you actually answer that question? The fourth sort of change that was listed was the mobile web. And there was a comment this morning made about how the phone is, you know, the phone is far more beyond just a cell phone. And, you know, it's interesting. I call two people on my phone. I call my other half and I call my best friend. And my mother. But really, I realize my phone, I make a lot, but I send far more emails and text messages and IMs and that kind of thing that I do actually my phone. But my phone is my link to my email. My phone's my link to a whole bunch of things. My phone is that, you know, I'm on Find a Grave whenever I go by a cemetery to see what, you know, who's buried there. I mean, I do a lot on my phone. And the idea of the mobile web, and I loaded today a whole bunch of society websites on my phone. And I realized I couldn't load a lot of them on my phone because they're not at all mobile friendly. It's just they haven't thought in that environment. And you know, maybe that's what we take home. But when we go back into thinking about how to change something, if I'm working to attract new leaders, I'm working to generate excitement, right? I want a quick win. I want something that's really exciting. And maybe it just is we can increase the web traffic on the site by doing something that's so mobile friendly. Sometimes it's an easy thing when you design mobile first and then make sure that sort of it works on the desktop. And the fifth change, and this is something I literally haven't forgotten since the study first came out. This is from philanthropy.com, just to give a proper citation for the source there. Number five was the growing importance of data. And societies in the past didn't used to use a lot of data. We think of data as the names and dates in the cemetery abstracts. But the truth is, the more you know about your members and the things that you're doing are especially important. One thing that I was encouraged by today was the number of times when someone said, well, we surveyed our members and asked them this. Or someone said, well, I guess we could survey our members, or we could survey this, or we could talk to this, we could have that data. Comparing the measurement of success for your society to comparing things that helps you to go to a new donor and say, your contribution helps this amount. This is the impact you have. And when you come before a board and you are now the change agent and you have to say, this is why we're going to do this, you have to have some data behind why you're doing it and what you hope to achieve. Because things absolutely have to be measurable. So what about us? Right, you're a change agent now, right? We talked about fundraising, we talked about demographics. But, you know, it's interesting. I think that we also need to realize that though we are change agents, we also are trying to be a change agent in a very, very difficult and complex world. Family history is overly complicated. And while it is a common ground that you'll have with your fellow board members in most cases, this is a very, very complex hobby. And the way that the people that we sort of bring into the hobby, those that are our fellow board members, very few have backgrounds in fundraising and being a treasurer and raising money and gaining membership and social media marketing. We look for those people. But we all have a very, very common ground in the fact that we're there for a love of family history and a love of the society. And so as you think about the controversies that you will have, because it's not going to be easy, you're going to have controversy, right? You're going to walk in and there will be someone that's going to absolutely not want to do what you want to do. Never forget the common ground you have in the complex hobby. I've been in more than one very, very tense board discussion before, and it is amazing how you can have lunch with someone and talk about the great finds you've both had on a research trip. You can fight with them for the next 4 hours in a board meeting and then have a lovely dinner with them, continuing the conversation from lunch about what you found. But think about how you can use that to your advantage when you begin to put these steps into action, right? How can you use the common love of family history when you're working with your peers on a board? I also think it's important that we remember as change agents that we are really in the middle of a changing definition between genealogy and family history. And you have to understand when you're going to be that agent what side you're on in this case. These words are interchangeable to many, but in fact they are very, very different. to some, genealogy is that methodological study of lineage-based research. There are some that believe that it is only genetic research, therefore, you know, adoptions and other instances shouldn't be counted in a true genealogy. Family history is much more open, much more broad, and much more story-based. There are ways to be both. There are ways to have elements from both. The number of genealogists will always be smaller than the number of those involved in family history. So when you're figuring out the audience for your things you're going to bring before your board, figure out how you're going to approach and who your target is. You know, if you're going to target those specific genealogists, let's identify that and define that from the very beginning. But if you're going to go for a larger audience towards stories and records and that within family history, let's make sure that we absolutely have that noted there. And there really is a growing divide. I try not to be gloom and doom because I feel like it doesn't help anybody to be completely negative. But we have to recognize that our societies, we've heard it today, and I mentioned it a little bit at lunch, but our societies really are suffering. That there is a growing divide between traditional genealogists and what I sort of term as the 21sters, which are those that discover family history through Ancestry or Family Search or a TV commercial. They have no idea how to load a microfilm. They don't even know what a microfilm reader is. They can't imagine a world where the census is not indexed. You know, these are the people that you have to convince, you know, how to browse. If you're going to bridge any gap, if you're going to make action, you have to bring representatives from all of those worlds into your boardroom. You absolutely have to. And so if there's one thing that I would say that you should bring back to start action is to help your board understand the importance of getting multiple voices. And then when those voices join the board, offer them as much support as you can as the change agent. Because they're going to have a very, very hard time. They might not come back. Right? When you put in it literally is like oil and water, because the board's going to realize that the person that literally indexed the census sits next to the person that has no idea censuses aren't automatically indexed. And they're going to be deciding about a project that might be indexing a cemetery. So being able to have those conversations, I think, is going to be especially key. Some of you have probably seen this before that I put up, which is sort of understanding our members and who we are. And it really shows that the branch of the if you put sort of the whole world on a giant chart, there is a percentage of the world that will have no interest at all in what we do. Right? They don't care about family history until they do, but you know they don't care in large. There are millions and millions of people that are curious about family history, but are not ready to invest time and money into it as a serious pursuit. I would put a lot of the DNA customers in the curious hobby. There are casual explorers, which we frequently underestimate to assist us in bringing change and action to societies. The casual explorer is the person that recognizes the excitement of finding the census and is willing to help out a little bit, but doesn't necessarily want to become a board member or a society president. Then you have the frequent explorers. Those are our mini-society volunteers, and then the absolute addicted, which do it all the time. Right? If we could just do genealogy, that's all we would do all day long. And so the best world comes actually when you as a change agent can bring together people from these different areas, these different elements of family history. Perhaps they're not interested in something that's a far reach that might not be the best people to get in the room. At the same time, having to convince someone that doesn't like what you do what you do is important is a very interesting exercise. You learn to use different language. You learn to approach things differently. Right? Maybe it's worth taking the person that you know does not know the benefits of family history, is not interested in seeing how would you make that approach if you're going to be the change agent about a specific element. So we really have a common connection for genealogical societies, and it really is a basis of discussion and action. We should use our experiences here to collectively give us some action items. So a couple of things I heard just from the topics. Membership. That personal face, that connection, whether or not it's a society president, whether it's a sort of greeting committee, that personal connection to me came through as such a strong idea. I would question a society that doesn't want to do something like that when a member walks in the door. I also like the concept of not putting new members on the spot to introduce themselves. I've been in that situation. It's awkward when you're 65. It's really awkward when you're 13. The idea of serving long-distance members is something that I think societies as a whole, we often forget about. And perhaps it is up to you as a change agent to help bring about action with your long-distance members as well. How represented or not represented, as the case probably is, are your long-distance members within your genealogical society board? All right, we talk about difficulties and bylaws with electronic voting, but if your membership, if a third of your membership is from outside of your immediate area, and your board is full of people that are all inside your immediate area, half or a third of your membership is not represented. How can you expect to bring about change for those individuals that have no representation on the board? Who's thinking about them? Who's acting on their behalf? Maybe that becomes one of the roles that you fill, or that you enlist a couple of others to start to fill those important slots. That we're here to represent the long-distance members. We're here to represent those that give us money, that have supported us for years, but haven't necessarily been able to show up and be part of a meeting. Marketing and social media. I loved the comments about blending tradition and technology. This is something that I wish I was better at, right? I am too old to be a millennial, but I am too young to be anything else. Right? I loathe the fact that I am just on the cusp of those millennials, because I look at some of my millennial friends and I just go, what are you doing? And then I look at millennial friends who came in, and you know, I remember when I, you know, when I moved into a new office at work, that came in and helped me paint the office for the day because we didn't have funds to paint the office and they wanted it to help out. And I thought, why can't you come in and index for an hour? Just index for an hour. No, we're good. But the blend of that tradition and technology, finding ways to blend that for marketing strategy is so important. And even if that's something, when you come in and recognizing that blend, I think from the very, very beginning, when we preface our conversations about action with finding a balance and finding blends between tradition and technology, I think it puts us off on the right foot because we recognize the importance of both. Keeping Facebook active was an interesting point that came up a couple of times. How long does it take? How do you maintain it? Because I am the worst on Facebook, right? I post, you know, once in a while. Because I read, I consume, I don't actually create in that form. And I know that I do myself and others a disservice because I'm not actively putting out content. But if you're going to launch more into that social sphere, that social media sphere, make sure we have a plan to keep it active. And then the last thing was video. At work, we have a brand new membership director, and she is a lover of Facebook Live, and I detest videos on the fly, right? I'm on TV. That's all scripted, edited, and then it's done, right? That's how that stuff works. And she's like, you gotta do Facebook Lives. And so I think the third day in her job, she walked to my office. She said, and here's Josh. And I'm like, what are you? She's like, you're on Facebook Live. And I'm like, you know, what can I do in that moment? But she's a change agent. And she forced it upon us. And you know what? You know what? We can track direct membership uptakes right from Facebook Lives. We can track event registrations that we know have come in specifically because of that Facebook Live. And you know what? She was exactly right, and I was completely wrong. And it took her walking in and just doing it and risking the consequences. Now, she knew that I wasn't going to get mad at her on camera in front of everyone else, so she was safe. But you know, after we turned it off, you know, she said, was that okay? And I said, yeah, actually it was fine, because it was a different side of what we represented as an organization. She tried. So I don't know if you want to just Facebook Live in the middle of your board meeting and say, here's so-and-so, but you know, would it hurt to grab a couple of people at a break during the board meeting and do a very quick 2-minute video that says, you know, welcome from the board, we're here at our board meeting, those that are willing to do a sort of Facebook Live and a video content? Let them start to see the tiny pieces of success from that. Management. This is a topic I love listening to. I think that the genealogical society boards too often forget they have a responsibility to the organization and walk in with a responsibility to themselves. Right? They love being the whatever member or board member or president, and they forget the fact that it's the organization, not them. The discussions of bylaws and written procedures were heartwarming. I was a parliamentarian in college and did all sorts of debate and that, so I love parliamentary procedure and I could go crazy at it. The need for an organization to remain on top of their bylaws and written procedures is essential. You know, boards nowadays don't have the opportunity and the luxury to wait for 45 days before they sit down at a board meeting at a table together. You just don't. You miss opportunities. So in New York right now, New York City Municipal, sorry, not Municipal Archives, New York City Department of Health proposed 2 weeks ago to basically nearly double the amount of time that a birth record be restricted. So it went from like 75 or 100 to 125 years. If you go to the NewYorkFamilyHistory.org on Monday, you can sign a letter and protest to the New York Department of Health about how horrible this is. So they put this out there. And you know, we started jumping on it, right? Immediately jumping on it. Our board meets 4 times a year, our official board of trustees. I mean, if I would have waited, we would have missed the opportunity to start getting involved with the conversation. And while people can always look back and say, "Ah, you shouldn't have done that," people can't always look from the current moment and say, "You know, I wish we had." Right? What if we had? You can always look back and learn from the mistake, but you can't learn from a mistake if you never make it. So having sort of that ability to act and to empower people to act in between a board meeting is especially important. Your president is the face of your organization, but your president with a collective and a trusted executive committee should be empowered to be able to operate your organization when you can't get 15 people together in a room. Because there are times when your action on something can be immediate and needs to be immediate. The other thing that I thought was important was the role of the nominations committee. I absolutely sympathize with the wonderful experience of being asked to be on the nominations committee and finding yourself nominated yourself. It is a humbling and frustrating experience. I think the most important committee in any genealogical society is the nominations committee. I didn't used to think that. I always thought it was the finance committee, but it's the nominations committee. The committee that sets the tone and the direction for your leadership is the nominations committee. It is an important job. It is where a change agent can really, really help. It is also where perhaps the best place you can represent those different elements of a millennial and a longtime society member and someone not interested, because you'll get a good blend of skills. I would encourage you to think about, if you haven't already, do a board matrix. Put a list of all the skills your society needs, and then mark and see who has those skills. And when your nominations committee, before you ask them to serve, have that for them so they can look at those skill sets and begin to look for the missing pieces of your organization. Your organization can do very well with 10 great editors, but you really only need one or two. Right? Find committee roles for the other 8 or cycle them out back and forth. So having that matrix can be important as a skill set for your nominations committee. So fundraising, how do we change agents in fundraising? You know, the very first 2 minutes of the fundraising conversation, fundraising is personal. Fundraising is relationship building. Absolutely. You're never asking for money once. You are building a relationship that you hope will lead you to be able to ask for money successfully without them turning you down. Board involvement in fundraising is very, very tricky. If you do something else as a change agent when you go home and try and put things into action, encouraging your board to contribute even a penny to fundraising efforts every year gives you the leverage to say, our board fully supports all fundraising activities of the organization. It is not the size of the gift, it is the fact that it occurred. Foundations, organizations that provide different grants, and even individual donors are more likely to invest in your organization if you have. Again, it doesn't have to be $5,000, it doesn't have to be $10. It could be a penny, could be a dollar. Just something so that every member of your board has invested and has become involved in that annual fund giving. It can go a very, very long way. And fundraising partnerships. You know, I think it's important that we begin to realize that societies as a whole, we're not experts on fundraising. We have really, really good projects like Ancestry Day, and have really good records initiatives. But by and large, we haven't done a lot of fundraising. This is certainly an area when you're looking for action that you could potentially put together the North Texas Society, you know, Fundraising Alliance, where you take fundraising skills you have from each of your organizations and work to teach and help to spread the wealth, so to speak, when it comes to fundraising. It's an area that, all societies could absolutely use. We also should make sure that we are looking outside of our own world and outside of this room for examples about how to run and how to be action-oriented within societies. There's a lot of great other nonprofit organizations. There's other message boards. There's mailing lists. I frequently, if there are boards that allow public meetings, if they have their nonprofit board with a public meeting, I attend. I want to see how other organizations that aren't genealogists operate their meetings. If they're having a fundraising event or a seminar, I absolutely will attend. I want to learn from those that aren't stuck in the mindset of genealogy to see how they'll run their organization. There's great things. A couple of resources that I use frequently that you might find yourself glancing at, the Nonprofit Times. So it's a website. You can, of course, you know, pay some fees for some additional content. But what it will provide is you're now that change agent, is it gives you practical examples and it gives you data. Right? It gives you that essential data to say that, you know, as a nonprofit, this is what's happening right now. These are the regulations that are occurring. This is what's happening in fundraising. This is how much money was raised for X amount, sort of percentage, based upon a certain category. So the Nonprofit Times is one place I'd look at. The sort of Nonprofit Quarterly, the NPQ, is another place to take a look at. And there's numerous examples of these types of instances. These were two, just if you need places to find your data, because you're going to have to go present a case, right? You're going to have to go gather more than just, I came to a one-day seminar, and this is what we heard, so this is what we're doing. Right? We've got to start building a case. So how do we find that balance? And this is tricky. You know, you have quite a task ahead of you, because you might go home and you say, you know, I went to the seminar and this crazy New Yorker said that we should do this, and this person at the panel said we should do this, so we're going to have an ancestry day. Or we're going to start a DNA project. And your board's going to go, no, we're not. No, we're not. We've always done it this way. Okay, so how do we tackle that? How are we going to encounter that? How are we going to act on that idea? Well, the first thing is absolutely to recognize that there does have to be a balance. If you try 7 new ideas at once, you might be able to get 1 or 2 of them done, depending upon the size of your organization. At the same time, and this you might have heard this last year from Kurt Witcher. He loves to use the analogy of the gun where you aim, and then never fire. Did you hear that last year? Yeah, heard that a lot. And it's true, actually. If you do not try a few things at once, you will try something and you'll test in something for an hour, for a year, and you'll learn from it, and you will have missed all the other things you could be doing in that process. Set very short benchmarks. We're going to try this for 4 months and see what happens. We're going to try this for 3 months and see what happens. We're going to segment. We're going to only test this with half our members. I mean, there's a bottom line in here that we have to grow, we have to change, right? We know that we have to adapt. But the truth is, there are far too many ideas of what to do, and some of those ideas are just, you know, do it the same way, versus people to actually bring those ideas to fruition. So I think from the beginning, let's make sure that we agree to disagree, right? We have to know from the very beginning, we have to agree to disagree. We have to make sure that we're watching for self-motivation, right? Because there's absolutely a temptation that it would be that, you know, I'm going to do this project and I'm going to save the society. Okay? What's our motivation? You are there as a steward to promote and protect the society. It is not your society. It is the society. It is our society. It is not yours. And that is a really hard thing to wrap your head around. I know, because I still have, because I talk about my society as my society, right? This is my society. It's not my society. I represent the society. I get to be part of the society. I'm a member of the society. But I don't own it. I don't operate it. I am, however, collectively, alongside other individuals, responsible for its success or its failure. So some of this is about shifting language when we're putting things into action. but, no, maybe, or I will do this because it's the right thing to do is a different approach than we should try this. Right? Is it you doing it or is it the society doing it? Maybe is an interesting word when you're leading off different new things. Maybe we should do this, maybe we shouldn't. How do you really feel? Right? Is this a yes or a no? I hate the word fine in a board meeting. That's fine, but... Or, should we do that? Yeah, fine. Now, I know there are some people that use fine because it's just how they talk. You know, fine always means yes, right? Oh, I'm fine with that. In a board meeting, when someone says fine to me, I immediately take it as you don't like it, but you don't have another idea and you're not willing to fight on it and you think I'm going to fail. So fine, go ahead. Let's wait. If. Well, let's try. Right? Let's try and see what happens. Otherwise, words like do, we, fun, and plan, right? Things that we will do together. We as a society could do an Ancestry Day. That's not, I think we should do an Ancestry Day. We can do an Ancestry Day. That type of positive language. Even if you have no idea exactly how you're going to do it when the words come out of your mouth, we're going to talk about you should probably have that. But it's we, it's not you. Things that are creative and new and things that are flexible. Trying to teach your organization flexibility is one element that as a change agent, you need to become almost an expert at. The ability to be flexible with things and to realize that the idea that you brought back might not end up as the idea that actually comes to fruition. Because it will be adapted and changed based upon the needs of the organization, not your needs. Not your president's needs or your board member, your secretary's needs, but upon the needs of the organization. You will absolutely encounter fear. Fear stops us from a lot of things. There is absolutely fear in organizations, specifically for boards as a whole, that if we don't do things that we've always done, our society is going to fall apart. Acknowledging fear from the very beginning is probably the best way to take this on. And it's okay to take risks. There was a good discussion of daytime or evening membership meetings. Why not try both and see what happens? Offer a program in the afternoon and offer it that evening and start to see what happens. Try that for 2 months, 3 months. Measure it, see who attends, and then make a decision on what's best for the organization. We should never be afraid to try new things as long as we can measure them. Now, I'm not saying take a blank check and just do everything. But try. And this, I think, comes in the way that we present these sort of step for actions. Coming to a board with a plan, with a proposal, is very different than coming with the board with an idea to do something. Ideas are great. Spend your time outside of the board meeting generating the idea and coming up with the proposal. And when you come to the board, be ready to present the idea. Have a direct conversation and identify the risks. The risk of doing an afternoon and an evening meeting. More money for a speaker potentially. Less audience at both because people will be split. That's two events to promote. That's two venues to secure. Those certainly are risks that could potentially lead to either idea not working. But I've identified them from the very, very beginning. And your board should be working outside of the board meeting. The best board meetings I've ever attended are business-oriented and then lead into large discussions that aren't set within the board environment. Because we're discussing ideas. We're working towards the organization. Recognizing your board, what skill sets you have. And if you have a particularly difficult board, or you're afraid that the idea that you want to bring back tomorrow or Monday to your board, or that you've already emailed potentially, might not be the right board, the right thing, take a list at your board and figure out what are the skill sets of those that you need the most, and how do you get them on board? Right? What do you need to make sure that particular idea actually happens? when you're looking at other friends and other associates on your board, you could potentially take a very, very good mentoring role about skill sets and how they could learn something. Right? The idea you're taking back is that the society should have a Facebook page that is updated 3 times a week. The problem is that no one in your board actually knows how to use Facebook like that. Great. Make it a 3 or 4 person ad hoc committee. Let it be a learning experience. Get together in an afternoon or a morning, whenever works, and learn how to use it together and share that information. Don't necessarily make it to be something that they have to do alone. Recognize that boards get exhausted. Volunteers get exhausted. I feel like leaders and boards as a whole say no to new ideas out of exhaustion without even knowing what they're doing. I'm tired. The only thing I can do right now is make sure that our seminar continues and our newsletter gets out. I don't have energy to think of something new. This sudden change, this isn't going to work. This is going to break up the routine. How do you overcome exhaustion? Co-chairs can be a blessed thing. They can also be a disastrous thing, depending upon the possibilities and the personalities. But presenting an idea with a co-chair helps someone avoid that individual exhaustion. The other thing within a society is delegating to people's strengths can really help to sell your idea. We have a great seminar. The idea for the society to do is that we do a webinar program. Our seminar chair is going to fight against that because they do that seminar program and they think it's going to take away. So enlist that chair beforehand to help you generate speakers for the seminar program. Say you're going to do it once or twice and use that skill set. Term limits are a wonderful thing, by the way. Term limits and forced time away from a board can bring a board member back completely refreshed. Maybe it's a year, maybe it's 2 years that someone takes away from a board. But just because you're not on the board doesn't mean you can't still volunteer. And those who truly love an organization will help out whether or not their name's on the letterhead. Term limits are not about taking away power. Term limits are about ensuring that the board is fresh and doesn't become overly tired. Now, bringing new ideas and putting things into action, just like fundraising, it's building relationships. So the longtime members, those that have been around for a long time, sit down and have a conversation outside of the board meeting about this new idea and see what they think of it. So that when you come to the board meeting, you already know what potentially a longtime board member might say. But you could also say, you know, I talked to 5 of our long-term members that aren't here, and these were their thoughts. And when they say things that you don't necessarily agree with or like, that's okay. Express their viewpoints. The biggest thing is we always get entitled as board members, and we feel like we have ownership over things. And you're going to have that same struggle because you're going to bring in this new idea to the society, and you're going to feel like it's yours. Well, just because it's your idea then becomes the society's. Right? You're giving that to the organization. This is where discussion versus informing a board is a great tactic. We are now going to do this, 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 and this. It's very different than, we'd like to discuss what we're going to do for the next 6 months. We'd like to discuss the possibility of a couple of projects. Along with that, build in phases when you're trying something that's dramatically new. Phase one is this, and if phase one is successful, we as an organization will then move to phase two. If you plan your new ideas and you plan your action items in phases, it helps those in the room that think, oh, that's never going to happen, right? Because you're at least seeing the phases worked through. But it also gives a point for the board members that have fear and that are the most against the idea. They will have input because they'll have to decide along with the other members of the board whether or not you continue. It drives your success because you're not shooting for the big ultimate goal. You're shooting for 3 weeks from now or 6 weeks from now when phase one is complete of this new idea. And focus. It's something as a change agent you'll run into, because if you focus on what really matters to the organization, Right? So sometimes people that have very, very good intentions, they get too overly focused on their exact duties, and they limit the organization in that sense. But one of my sort of favorite quotes that someone told me is that you need to have a long-term focus and a short-term view. And I use that when I walk into board meetings now, and I try and remind my fellow colleagues in a board meeting, I say, you know what, we need to make sure we have the long-term focus and the short-term view. Because if we don't know sort of what we're reaching for the next 5 years, the next 6 years, we can't find the phases or the steps to move up to that point. This is where a good leader, a good president, will help to keep that in mind for the board as they're having discussions. The hardest thing to do as a society president is to be neutral during a discussion, because people usually know how you feel about something. So if you're not the president, help the president find that neutrality. Be willing to lead that discussion. You're going to run into some misunderstandings. I'm sure of it. You're going to have people that, you know, they don't agree with you all the way. They think that there's something else. Remember, you are presenting a proposal. You're not simply presenting what we're doing, right? You're presenting the idea of what to do. So start right? Change is slow and change is constant, but give the board a step-by-step action plan for what you want to do. If it is something that is very, very dramatic, and things are dramatic to different types of boards, right? Changing a logo can be earth-shattering for some organizations. Changing the seminar location can be earth-shattering for an organization. If it's going to be that type of a discussion, break away from the typical board environment. If you always have your board meeting on the second floor of the library in room, conference room C, do it somewhere else. If you're going to shake up the board, take the organization, take your colleagues out of the normal environment, somewhere where you can work for the good of the organization. That oftentimes helps remove entitlement. I used to have a colleague on a Geological Society board who I didn't like this very much, but it was effective. She would rearrange the setup in the room for every board meeting. She'd shift a table here and a chair here and that there. And what she was doing is she was making sure that no one sat in the same place for every board meeting. And it was really, really effective, because rather than walking in and sitting in the same corner that I always sat in, I was suddenly sitting there, and then I was sitting there, and I was sitting by different people, and she did it in a way that I could never sit near the same people that I always sat with, right? Because there were four of us that sat in a row, and she did make sure there were never four complete empty chairs in a row. So it forced us as a board to interact with others. It forced us to actually talk about these ideas. And these small visual optic things actually have a huge difference, right? The organizers of this event did something very, very smart today. They forced you to sit with people that you didn't necessarily know. Wasn't that smart? Didn't you have conversations that weren't necessarily, that you would always have, because your society is represented there and there and there? I know it was uncomfortable and you wanted to sit next to your friends. I get that. But you're there for your organization, not for yourself. Sometimes a social activity can do a world of good for bonding for a board. Something that is outside of the board meeting, that's outside of a discussion, that's just something social and fun. A holiday party at someone's house, a get-together somewhere, where you basically get to see people outside of the normal environment. Altering the agenda of a board meeting can be very, very important when you're trying to be a change agent, leaving time for decision versus discussion. So a couple of boards that I've been on, the board meeting literally is less than 15 minutes long. The board gets together at 5 p.m. They spend 2 to 3 hours discussing business and discussing items, and they officially open the board meeting at 7, and they vote on things they decided on during discussion. And that's the board meeting. It allows those that are uncomfortable in the parliamentary procedure world, those that are uncomfortable in a world where you can't necessarily, well, how do we speak and how to recognize the chair and all those different rules, it allows for a free and open discussion. And the decisions are made in the actual board meeting, and there's anything that has to officially be in the minutes appears there. But it's amazing the things that you'll learn when people aren't necessarily pressured to realize that their remarks will be recorded in the minutes somewhere. Or the fact that the board doesn't have to make a decision. I was always amazed in those discussions, the far number of votes that we weren't quite sure how was going to go in the actual board meeting, because it was very, very close. And people are much more likely, typically, to speak in opposition of something if it's outside of the minutes and outside of the vote than if it's sort of locked into that specific board meeting cycle. Let them speak their mind and speak about those different ideas. The nitty-gritty of what you're going to bring to the board, of what action items you want to bring. Writing it down is key, because if you present it and give it as a presentation, people learn different ways. Right? We talked about that as well today. Having that written proposal, for me, I love charts and graphs. Right? It doesn't matter how good the idea is, I want to know what the benchmarks are. I want to know how I'm going to measure it as success or a failure. So having that sort of concrete information can be very, very key. Also make sure that you take a proactive step and identify the risks before you present that proposal, so that the risks become part of the proposal. That way, before the person says, but that's going to happen, that, anticipate that. In fact, have a discussion beforehand if you feel comfortable doing that. So you've identified the risk and you know what you're going to do to overcome that risk. Having those key benchmarks are really, really key. I can't emphasize enough, knowing what your intention is. Having goals. We talked a lot about increasing membership and retaining membership. But what is success to you? Is it simply, we got some members? What are your membership goals? Do you want to increase membership by 5%? By 15%? Do you want retention to be at 85% or 50%? Lots of great ideas. And at a board meeting, you might have a number of really good ideas. But ideas that can be measured, or that when the idea is presented, some sort of measurability comes into play, can be especially important. It's all about scale. To one society, adding 5 new members in a year could be a significant achievement. And that's great. Goal achieved. To another society, adding 50 a year or 500 a year could be absolutely successful. So make sure you know what's success. And then as a board, celebrate those successes. So for a couple of organizations I've worked with, we have a goal metric, sort of 5 goals for the whole organization every year. And they're the same goals all year long. They're set by the board at the very first meeting, and they're measured throughout the year. And at the end, if we all meet the goals, we have a very, very nice holiday party. I have a board member that brings some very nice champagne. That's how we celebrate. And if we don't meet the goals, the champagne doesn't come. It's a small little thing, right? It doesn't really mean, no one does it for the champagne. But boy, it's very interesting to watch how decisions are made and how people work outside of board meetings when there's something that everyone is working for. Right? Our 5 goals are all adding to that. And the goals aren't the seminar. The goal is we want to bring in X number of dollars in educational revenue, which means that the person doing the webinar program and the monthly seminar and the yearly seminar and the monthly meetings, they have to work together because they own that part of the goal for the society. Our goal is to have an X percentage of reach on social media. That means the person that doesn't know how to use Facebook comes up with ideas for content for Facebook because they want to contribute to that goal. So goals, I think, are very important when you're bringing ideas back to your society and to your organizations. Now, we could talk about a lot of sort of different things and different ways to work together. You know, I come back to that listing of trends and sort of shifts in nonprofits and where we're at. Goals give us data, right? We know we have to be more mobile friendly, but it really is a lot about understanding our organization. When we're working to find balance with new ideas and with tradition, I'm happy. In fact, there's a couple of ideas I jotted down today that I can't wait to present to my local society. I'm really excited about it. But I'm going to present it with a plan and with some goals, because I know that if I walk in and say, I heard this great thing, they're going to go, oh, here's another thing. You go to these conferences and you come home with all these ideas. Yeah, I do. It's I do. So I'm going to present it with some goals, because if we don't know when we succeed, we have no idea when we fail. None of our organizations is without succeeding, or it's without failure. Right? Some of us are simply stable, but I would argue that even stability in a genealogical society is failure, because our natural demographic will shift to decreased membership. Right? Even if we are simply stable and coasting along, if we are not succeeding, we're failing. If we don't know what we're doing, we're just doing it because it's what we've always done as an organization, then how will we know whether we've ever actually succeeded? And when you go back to an organization, you're sitting in front of a major donor, it is a lot easier to explain the three things your society succeeded at rather than explain how desperate you are for their money so that you can continue to exist as an organization. It's a different type of conversation. So collaborative actions, absolutely. You're here together, you're in a room, you're with peers, you're with friends. I've seen people exchange addresses. I'd encourage you to continue communicating with one another as society leaders. URL change agents, if I could get you little badges, I would. I should have brought badges. But congratulations, you're enlisted, you're drafted, and the things that you can do are incredible. It's not a gloom and doom situation for our societies. It's just not. There is so much potential out there, and it's all about working together to seize the potential. And you know, next year maybe there'll be even more society leaders here, and the year after that even more and more as we watch our societies grow and adapt and change and shift. And find that balance between that, you know, wonderful 90-year-old member and the 13-year-old who raises his hand and says, I'm here to learn how to do my family history. That's the balance where our societies really find a lot of success. So for a couple minutes left, happy to answer questions, comments, thoughts. Yes?
I have two questions. You mentioned Genealogy Roadshow. When is that starting again?
So Roadshow, when is it starting up again and am I doing it? We are on hiatus right now from Genealogy Roadshow. Tell your local PBS station you would like us to return. We're on an 18-month cycle, so we're thankfully taking a breath. It's a lot of prep time before each season. And if it comes back, as of now, I'm contractually obligated. I can't appear on any other genealogy show on TV. So it's the way it goes, but I'll probably be involved when and if we come back. Yep.
Ancestors back to the 1500s. They don't have any proof, anything. So how do you deal with those people?
How do you with those people who've been to Ancestry and said that they've found everything about 1500 with no proof? A deal is in wanting them to join a society, or just figuring out how to communicate with them. It's sort of anything and everything.
Yes.
One thing that I do is from a society standpoint, actually we can develop programs that sneakily like teaches a why you have to have a citation, but it should address the WIFM, right? What's in it for me? Okay, so I have my ancestry tree, now what? Bring them in the door and have that conversation. Also, genealogists are, this is being recorded so I have to be careful, but genealogists are, it is the most interesting narcissistic hobby if you think about it. We research ourselves and our ancestors, and we love to talk about our ancestors. So it's not necessarily that self-narcissism, but boy, oh boy, do we love to talk about dead people. We just love it. Oftentimes, you can connect people together, even if they have a tree back 1500s. Well, great, we're going to have a storytelling event, and we're going to have a panel of three local celebrities, right? A chef, we're going to have the mayor, somebody else, and we're going to have them judge the best ancestral story. So people are going to dig in their trees, find these things, right? And you have a storytelling event. And then maybe at the end we talk about some citations and why that may or may not be true. But it helps to get those that think it's already done, because you know, I want to have the best story. I want to see what I can do with it. So that's a couple of ideas for that. There are also others that you just will never convince that all of that stuff is inaccurate, and that's okay. You know, there's all different types of populations. You're welcome. Other questions? You've been so talkative all day, and now you're just... It's all right, I can see it. It's been a very, very full day.
You've done such a great job, we might run out of questions.
No. I think you're... All right, thank you.